Welcome. This is Solveig Spesa Musik, Radio Rakel FM 99.3. My technician today is Ingmar Bob Nielsen. I'm Solveig Sørbø, and my guest today is Dana Swarbrick, and we're speaking mostly English, I think. Welcome, Dana.
Thank you so much for having me, Solveig.
I'm so glad that you're here. And I forgot to say before we went on air, we're also supposed to have a good time. Right? Okay. No, we were planning just really fast. We were making a plan for the show, but I forgot to say that that's a very important point as well. So, Dana, do you want to just tell us all who you are?
Yes. Yeah. Jeg heter Dana Swarbrick på norsk, og jeg gjør min doktorgrad på Universitetet I Oslo. I'm learning Norwegian, so I'll try my best to mix them in.
Veldig bra, veldig bra.
Men jeg forsker karantenekonserter. And initially I was hired into RITMO, which is the Center for Interdisciplinary Studies in Rhythm, Time, and Motion, to examine the effects of live concerts on social connection. And my supervisor, Jona Vuoskoski, she has previously studied emotion and music. And for example, her research shows that like people really enjoy sad music, and actually people that exhibit greater empathy enjoy sad music more. But of course, in my sixth month being in Norway, the coronavirus hit, and this caused the cancellation of all live concerts, and it threw off my research plans. But I was able to quickly adapt, and there was a new field that was birthed through the coronavirus called pandemic musicology, or pandamusicology, however you want it. And so I have actually been involved with four different projects over the last year. And what's amazing is two of them, just this week, the papers that I wrote for them have been accepted.
Wow.
And
that's great.
Yeah, the other one is still, one of them is still in revisions, but it's still kind of done. And then, of course, there was the music lab that you and I worked on together. So I thought I would share a little bit about the findings from that research.
Brilliant. Yeah.
So the first study is called Quarantine Concerts, although the name has changed now to Corona Concerts. And basically, I was watching several virtual concerts and scrolling through some comments and noticing that occasionally I would feel really connected to the performer. And occasionally, I'd also get goosebumps and chills just watching. And even this was in a case where I had watched a concert that had already aired, but people were commenting, saying how connected they felt when they were there in the live stream. And so I wondered what elements of this concert and these concerts make people feel these feelings of social connection to not only the artist, but also the other audience members. And I collaborated with another group at the University of Oslo called the Kama Muta Lab. So Kama Muta is a term, it's actually a Sanskrit term, that is used to describe the emotion we often call being moved or feeling touched in English. What's that called in Norwegian?
Bli rørt.
Yeah.
Or bli beveget.
Mm.
Yeah.
So this is an emotion that is often characterized by things like feeling a warm feeling in the center of your chest, or getting tears in your eyes, or feeling an immediate sense of welcoming. Mm-hmm. And it's believed that sudden onsets of connectedness, or something called a communal sharing relationship, produces this social relational emotion. And it's also thought that empathy, which is feelings of concern for others in negative situations, that this is part of the same construct. And so this research group actually has a scale that they've developed. And so I worked with Professor Beata Siept, and she contributed a lot in terms of measuring Kama Muta in these virtual concerts. And so I met with a number of different groups and brainstormed, you know, what are elements that you find make you feel socially connected and Kama Muta in these virtual concerts. And I created an extensive survey. And we sent this out into the world, into the ether, and we had over 300 responses. And what was really cool is actually a majority of them came from Chile. And so we also had a collaborator in Chile named Noemi Grinspun, Grinspun. And she was super helpful as well and created the Spanish translation of the survey. And we found that people who are watching live concerts felt more social connection, but not more kamamuta, than people who are watching pre-recorded concerts. Another question I wanted to ask was, if somebody watched one of these live streamed concerts, but that were recorded and aired afterwards, as in they weren't watching in real time with other people, would this create an illusion where people still felt like it was live? And the answer was no, that in fact, people did not feel greater sense of social connection when watching these, let's say, live streams viewed after they were aired. Another really interesting finding was that we asked people to what extent were the social distancing measures of the coronavirus salient in the concert. So, for example, did performers or audience members discuss the coronavirus or ask for donations? And the salience of the coronavirus actually predicted both social connection and kamamuta. And what was really interesting is we did something called a mediation analysis, which assesses for whether there's like an effect traveling through another variable. So we found that the effect of the salience of the coronavirus on kamamuta was completely mediated by social connection. And what's really cool about this finding is that this is in line with current theories on kamamuta, because it's hypothesized and theorized that it's these sudden feelings of connection that produce the social relational emotion, kamamuta. And this research supports those theories.
Does that mean that people get more touched and moved if they are also feeling connected?
Yeah, and that feeling of being touched and moved actually comes from a sudden onset of being connected. Oh. And this also, what's interesting is it's also within the backdrop or the salience of the coronavirus. That would be something that would remind you of this shared struggle you're having with other people. But it's also a negative thing in some contexts.
What does salience mean? I don't
know. Awareness.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So the awareness that they had of the coronavirus in the concert. So. Mm.
Wow. These are some really interesting findings.
Yeah. And one question I also got a lot while I was presenting this research was actually, what is the effect of genre? Mm. And initially, I didn't really have any hypotheses about how genre would affect concerts. Mm. I thought, you know, maybe because a folk singer has less of a sound setup, or maybe because a DJ just uses their laptop, they could reproduce a similar audio signal as they would at a live concert. So, but I didn't really know. So when we investigated, though, genre did have or did significantly predict social connection. And when looking at some comparisons between genres, we found that the significant difference was between the dance and classical genres, such that people watching dance concerts ended up feeling more socially connected than people watching classical concerts.
Right. But how about the singer-songwriter genre?
Yeah, so folk did not. So we lumped singer-songwriters into the genre of folk, and there were no significant differences between folk and other genres.
How did it compare to dance music?
Well, there were no, it was technically or like statistically not different than dance.
Okay, okay.
However, we do know that audio quality was another really important predictor.
But okay, so better than classical. I mean, there was more connectedness. Yeah,
exactly.
That's what I wondered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the audio quality, and how did that affect it?
Yeah, so audio quality was also a predictor of social connection and, at least for sure, kamamuta. No, I think it was just kamamuta. Yeah, so audio quality positively predicted kamamuta, as well as something called physical presence, which is your feelings of being there in the virtual environment or in the virtual concert. And so that actually goes to show that it is important for both performers and listeners, if they want the full concert experience, to make sure that their audio quality is as best as it can be.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But I mean, did it also predict the level of kamamuta and social connectivity, or at least the social connectivity, the opportunity to give feedback that others could see you commenting, sending hearts, sending likes? I mean, I mean, I feel more connected, at least if I'm able to write and chat on the side of the concert. And that's what a lot of people were doing during these Corona concerts as well.
Yeah, so actually our measure of social connection included not only how participants felt, mm-hmm. We asked them, how connected do you feel to the performer? How connected do you feel to other audience members? But it also included those connection behaviors. So if they liked or they commented or they shared the concert, we actually included that in the measure of social connection.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm just associating with something I saw yesterday. I saw, it wasn't a concert, but it was a live stream by Heinbach. He was live streaming that he was opening some kind of a tape thing. Okay, I don't know what it was, but he was asking people to help him find out what it was, and it was a single speed things or yeah. I didn't. It was too technical for me, but I felt so connected, and that was because. People were commenting and he was talking to us and it became even more like intense because he was clearly holding the phone in his hand and then he was placing it on a piano and we heard the sound of the piano keys as he placed all of us and we were like 136 people inside his phone. He placed all of us on his piano keys in front of us. So that was like something that was not planned at all, but it made it all feel like very, very real in a way. So I'm thinking that those kind of instances as well, like anything that makes the performer seem humane, I guess, could also maybe affect this level of social connectivity.
Yeah. We also found that the amount that performers interacted with the audience was also an important predictor of social connection. Yeah. So I think that ties right into what you just said.
Yeah. Eye contact and just like being listening to their feedback, because sometimes they would maybe say things like, what do you want me to play now? Should I play another song? What do you want? And then if they actually take this feedback from the audience, then of course they must feel more connected. It's very clear. Well, it's really cool, and congratulations for having your papers accepted. It's great work.
I thought I might throw out into the virtual environment you're currently listening to this next dance track. This is a song called Touch the Sky, and I sing on it, but it's actually produced, and almost all of the work was done by my friend Cromac, and it also has backing vocals by Brock Hewitt. So,
okay, and we're going to listen to it. Right now.
Every time I climb, I feel brand new. What's the better time until I break through? Getting close, I can almost see the view. Stop running.
You are listening to Dana Swerbrick talking on Spice and Music on 99.3 Radio Raquel.
Great. I love these live jingles. And the track that we just listened to was Chromac, Touch the Sky, featuring Dana Swerbrick and Brock Hewitt. And Dana Swerbrick is here with me today. And I hope that you at home could feel the social connection as you listen to this EDM track together. And just like a recap, this particular genre of music proved to be a predictor of kamamuta and social connectedness in the Corona concert studies that Dana has been performing. So that's quite cool.
Sorry, just to clarify, it was that in comparison to classical, and I think that's an important distinction, that there were not necessarily any significant differences between any of the other genres. But when you looked at the comparison between dance versus classical, dance predicted greater feelings of social connection.
Yeah.
I know. I'm so sorry.
But not necessarily kamamuta.
No, it wasn't different with kamamuta.
Yeah, I see. Great. Yes. It's good to have that clear. Okay. So what now? Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the research, or do you want to tell us about like live coding, or?
No, I will tell you about my second research project.
Right.
This is the other paper that was just accepted this week, and it's called Live Stream Experiments. So after this survey study was up and running, I was contacted by a wonderful PhD student named Kelsey Onderdick at the University of Ghent. And she was interested in collaborating because she, like me, had feelings that there were certain elements of these live stream concerts that might produce differences in social connection. And so together we wanted to explore agency, which is feelings of being in control in a virtual environment, feelings of presence, so that's whether you feel like you're there in the environment, as well as manipulate some social context. And to do that, for testing or manipulating agency, we gave half of the audience the ability to vote, and half of them were not able to vote for the final song the performer played. And in this particular concert, we found that, and we examined people's feelings of connectedness to the artist as well as to the other audience members. And we found that rather than voting having an effect on people's feelings of connectedness, that it was actually if their preferred song was played, regardless of whether they had the ability to vote, they felt more connected to the artist. Mm-hmm. In the second
Voting for what? Like voting for the next song?
For the final song that the artist played.
Yeah.
They were asked, would you like to hear a melodic or a rhythmic song? And then they chose based on that. And in the second concert, we aimed to manipulate feelings of presence by providing one group of participants with virtual reality headsets, and they watched in an immersed type of way. Mm-hmm. In the second group, they watched in a YouTube 360-degree stream where you can actually control the view by pressing some arrows. And the third group watched a regular YouTube live stream. And it was actually a trio of musicians that were making some kind of contemporary improvisational music. They were called NIM. And we found that virtual reality headset did produce greater feelings of connection to the artist. And we also found that what was interesting was people's levels of empathic concern also predicted feelings of connection towards the artist. And this relates to other research that showed that actually people's levels of empathy also predicted whether they understood the emotion that the performers were communicating, but only when it was that people with high empathy were better at this in an online context, but there was no difference in a real life context. So that shows that people who have high empathy might be able to have an advantage on perceiving the emotion when presented over an online version as opposed to the live version.
But they have to bring much more like imagination into play, I guess, like fill out the gaps. If you have to imagine, I mean, it's a bigger distance then, right? When you're listening to something that is...
It's being mediated.
Yeah, it's mediated and some aspects are lost in that...
Yeah, in that interaction.
Yeah,
well,
I guess.
One unidirectional interaction.
Because it's like if you're reading a book or something, then you need to kind of invent part of what's happening. You have to use some imagination in order to be able to like feel what the characters in the book are feeling, I guess. Mm-hmm. While being face to face with someone is much more immediate.
Yeah. Well, and people with empathy, this is also associated with things like feeling greater connection with nature, for example, and feeling greater connection in other settings. And so I think that also people with higher levels of empathy just feel greater levels of connection and somehow have a better perception of emotion than people with low levels of empathy.
But they're able to bridge the gap, the technological gap, more because of their higher sense of empathy. Yeah. How did you measure their level of empathy?
There's an existing widely used measure, and it's called the Empathic Concern Scale. And it asks people questions like, you're supposed to rate on a scale. When I see somebody in pain, or let's say in a negative situation, I want to help them, for example. That would be an indicator of somebody feeling empathy. Or there's also some negative ones, so you reverse score ones where it's like, I rarely feel concern for those in need, for example. Mm. And that would be somebody, if you answered high on that question, you have low empathy, for example.
Okay, yeah.
And in the third concert we did, we were trying to manipulate social context. And the way we did this was we showed half of the participants were watching the concert in a Zoom call, and half the participants watched just a regular YouTube live stream. And actually watching in Zoom resulted in less connection with the artist, but more connection with the other audience members. Mm-hmm. And that's probably because these people were able to see the other audience members that were also at the concert. Mm.
But then so they had less connection with the artist and more with the other audience members.
Yeah, compared to this YouTube group.
But, okay, so it couldn't be a more connectedness all in all?
No. But, so that's where that was really interesting. But it could be because also seeing the other audience members is quite a bit more distracting than when you're at a live concert, for example. So at a live concert, you're often sitting side by side with people and you're looking at the performer. Whereas in Zoom, these people were hyper aware that others were looking at them as well. And they were looking at other people too. And so this maybe took them actually away from the feeling connection with the artist.
Between a proper concert, you don't see the audience members because they also have it. They also black out the
down. Exactly.
Audience area, and you feel super connected to the artist on stage who is there in the limelight, right?
Exactly.
It's part of the magical thing about live concerts.
Yeah, absolutely. So those two studies now are off in the pipeline of almost being published, and I'm very excited about that. Mm-hmm. But we also had a project together called Music Lab. For those of you that don't know, Sylvai is an incredible librarian who's also at she just stuck her tongue out of me, who's at the University of Oslo, and she helps us at RITMO by planning events that are called Music Labs, where we really try to bring the audience behind the curtain that is science and have them not only participate in the research, but also see what happens after we collect the data. And we organized a live streamed Algo Rave,
which was in which we also have as one of the episodes here in Space and Music, Music Lab 5. Yeah. If somebody's interested in listening to it.
You should totally go listen to it. It's with two renowned live coding performers, Renick Bell and Koparchi. And they did a fabulous job of creating a rave where we actually tried to measure the audience's motion using their own mobile phones. And there were actually some issues, as with all science, there were some hiccups with the data collection. So actually, I don't have a substantial amount of data, and so not enough to do any kind of inferential statistics on it. Yeah. But it's still really interesting to look at and to see that, yes, we can, in fact, measure motion at a virtual concert. I wanted to share with you that I also used to be part of a live coding group called the Cybernetic Orchestra at McMaster University. And it was run by Dr. Ogborn, David Ogborn, who's a fantastic, also renowned live coder, who actually Koparchi has worked with, which was super cool to see all my worlds collide. Yeah. And when I was part of this group, I learned the same language that Koparchi was using during his live coded performance called Tidal Cycles. And it's this fun program where basically there's all these built-in samples and you call a sample by naming it. And I actually did a cover of one of my own songs and I made it with Tidal Cycles. And what you're hearing right now is that performance done in 2016. And it involves like, the cycles is referencing how you can hear it's looping back and forth.
To talk a little bit more about what we are listening to. So this is Dana Sporbrick doing a version of her own song, No Love Left, using a programming language called Tidal Cycles, right?
And actually this performance was done in this amazing laboratory that I used to work in. It's called the Live Lab, and it's at McMaster University, which is in Hamilton, Ontario, in Canada. And it's a concert hall that seats 100 people and was designed to look at the interaction engagement between audience members and performers. But you can also look at things outside the musical context, in dance and in other arts. There's been theater work, but also they've looked at things like pedagogy and what allows people in lecture halls to learn, for example. And it's fitted with motion capture technology. And actually, for my undergraduate thesis, looked at the head movements in a rock concert, and we found that people who were fans of the performer actually moved more vigorously and more in time with music of the performer, even though they had never actually heard those particular songs. And we also found that people at a live concert moved more vigorously than people who were listening to the pre-recorded music as well.
Oh, now you're singing. shall we listen a little bit? Yeah.
Thank you.
was really cool, cool version. I mean, I know, and we are going to hear the like the normal version later on. So it was very exciting to hear this cybernetic orchestra live coded version. Dana,
thanks for sharing. But it was so much fun doing the music lab with you, Sylvie. And I know that you're a very job title says sexy librarian at Universitet I Oslo, that actually Sylvie is the incredible producer of Music Lab, and you've got so many other things going on. How was the Music Lab concert on Friday?
Oh yeah, we had a Music Lab with an artificial intelligence called Kavi, made by Chare Erdem, who is also at Ritmo where you study, or where you're doing your PhD.
His desk is right behind mine.
Yeah, and he had coded a whole... It's called a co-adaptive audiovisual instrument. Wow. And it was made for effects and improvisation, trained with data from guitarists. And I think it went fine. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's great. A lot happening there in Music Lab. But today we are mainly talking about you.
Yeah.
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 So much going on.
Yeah. You mentioned... the other version of this song that we just heard. So what I really love about that song is that while it was written in Canada, it was recorded and produced in Canada by Michael Chambers, was the producer on that, who's actually produced like City in Color and White Horse in the past. And but I brought it with me to Norway, and I actually collaborated with Cato Langnes at NOTAM, which is the, do you know the acronym, what it stands for?
I can't pull it off my head right now.
Me either. But it's a Norwegian technology and music production and other things area. Super awesome service they offer. Mm-hmm. And he actually showed me and taught me how to master and helped me master that track, which was the
coolest.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then actually it was with you. Sylvie invited me to a movie shoot where we were extras in this really cool video or movie.
Yeah.
And that's where I met Molly. Can you say her full name again for me?
Molly Galloen Røsseth.
Yeah.
She's a great filmmaker, yeah. Documentaries, but she also does music videos.
Yeah, so we collaborated with the music video for this track. So, and I'm just blown away by her work. She was absolutely incredible, so professional. And it was even, the music video was featured on Ballade. Mm-hmm. .no.
Yeah.
And it was really...
Check it out, folks.
Yeah, please check it out. But I'll let... it take us away on a journey into the forest.
There's a devil in my garden, this garden of love, turning my violets into violence and my puppies into drugs. Addicted to this sadness, so addicted to this lust. He is stealing all my smiles and slowly stealing all my love. When this potion wears off in darkness, I'll be no help, no hope, no love left for me. When this poison burns out in darkness, I'll scream no help, no hope, no love. Waters of peace, taking my healthy blue, choking it to ivy green. You say you wanna talk, but no, we're talking. I can do so, I'll just run from the devil and run from the demon and run away from you. When this junk suburbs up, only pain I will see. No help, no hope, no love left for. When this high comes down, what drugs I will need? No help, no hope, no love left for me. There's a monster in his mind, and his mind alone whispers lies into my ears and turns his yes into no's. My victim of this madness, just a victim of myself. No more blaming others for what it becomes. I'm a change all on my own. When the sickness leaves, how long, how it be? No help, no hope, no love left for me. When the sadness goes away, all alone, now I stay. No help, no hope, no love left.
No Love Left by Dana and the Monsters Under the Bed.
Yes.
Dana Swarbrick here.
Yeah. I actually, I changed the band name recently. We're no longer Under the Bed. We've come out from Under the Bed and we're just Dana the Monsters now.
Okay. And that's easier. Dana and the Monsters.
Yeah.
Who are the Monsters?
Well, in that song, the Monsters were Eric Green on guitar, Alex O'Neill on drums, and last but not least, Ethan Tilbury on the bass. But since moving away, I had to say goodbye to those monsters and hello to some new ones. And at a festival I played last summer, the monsters were Louis Sather on drums and Ben Dick. Oh, I'm not going to remember his last name. I should look it up. No, you know Ben Dick's last name.
But oh my God. Oh, sorry, Ben Dick. I don't. What's the last name?
I'm going to look it up because we love Ben Dick. And
hi,
he
Ben
was
Dick.
On guitar. And he's fabulous. And I'm sure there's people out there being like, I know which Bendick this is. How could they not know his last name?
Yeah,
it is Bendick. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Nah, yeah. No.
1 second.
No stress.
Bergestig.
Yeah.
Bergestig.
That's
Bendick
it, yes.
Bergestig på guitar, also på sitar. He was playing a sitar as well at the show.
Mm-hmm.
As well as, last but not least, again, my bassist, Eric Grandelius. So, what was so funny, actually, I love Norway because I have fallen in love with climbing. And I was at the climbing gym and I mentioned my now boyfriend and partner.
Dana, you are so strong. People should just like look you up on Instagram just to see how you climb, like defy gravity.
Oh man, it's so much fun, Sylvie. I have to take you out sometime because...
How many kilos of muscle did you lose from your back again? Just by not working out for half a year?
You told me.
I was like, your back is so strong. And then you were like, Then you told me, you remember? You told me you had lost like 3 kilograms of muscle. It's not the question that
so
you expected,
was,
I know.
Oh
but
that was not,
just had
I mean,
to.
That was not something we want to put on radio.
But no, put it on the radio.
It's fine.
It's
no,
just
that
FM.
Was actually from, it's just FM. No one's listening. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. I'm totally joking.
Okay.
I'm going to share this. Hope we can edit afterward.
Anyway, no, we're not editing this out.
So we were climbing, and then I went to this public talk 2 days later, and I'm there, and it's this really cool, David Brashears was giving a talk on Mount Everest. And this guy, after the talk, comes up to me, and he's like, hey, you're looking for a bassist, right? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, oh, I know a guy. His name is Eric Grandelius. So I look Eric Grandelius up on Facebook and I message him like, hey, I'm looking for a bassist. I heard you play bass. And he's like, yeah, but I'm currently sailing in Greece. But you can come down here if you want.
No.
Of course, I didn't. They were doing some deep water soloing. So for context, Eric is this like crazy strong climber.
Why didn't you go? I totally thought that you would say, of course I went.
I was doing my PhD.
You're a yes person.
I know I am. I should have because, but I was like, I was was in a Norwegian mood, I think, because, you know, I don't know. I don't mean to say that. I did not just say that. I meant that, like, you know, sometimes, I mean, maybe. Anyways, I was busy, okay? And then, yeah, so Eric and I have been playing together, and we actually, so he's this brilliant climber, like one of Sweden's strongest climbers, and so we are both similarly inspired by climbing and mountains, and we actually wrote a song together, and I was hoping I could share it today with you. So Eric takes all the credit for the chords, and I wrote these lyrics.
And you're going to sing it to us here live in the studio on the Easter. How great is that?
Cascade and men fade away, and mountain flowers grow. I met a woman, a goddess of stone. Know how she lifted my soul. The storm swept in, and I was blindsided, got stuck in a flurry of snow. And all of a sudden, I was left in the dark. Where the mountain casts its shadow, where the mountain casts its shadow, that's where she left my heart. Kicked it over the edge, pushed me over the ledge without a second thought. Where the mountain casts its shadow, that's where she broke my trust. Took away my power, and she left me sour, and she did it all for lust. She gave me a power to climb through the hours. She gave my world a glow. Didn't know it then, but she sure knows it now. Oh, how I love her so. But a storm swept in, and I was blindsided, got stuck in a flurry of snow. And all of a sudden, I was left in the dark, where the mountain cast its shadow, where the mountain cast its shadow. That's where she left my heart. Kicked it over the edge, pushed me over the ledge without a second thought. Where the mountain cast shadow, that's where she broke my trust. Took away my power, and she left me sad. She did it all for lust.
Thank you so much, Dana. Tell us, Tell us a little bit more about this song.
Yeah, so just so you know, it's still actually a work in progress, and this is the first time I've ever performed it live. I wish that Eric could be here with me to play the bass, but coronavirus, and not that he has it, just, you know, space, guys. But it is kind of inspired by the Norwegian mountains and the scenery. I've heard some crazy stories of Eric's, for example. He actually, with his friend Andreas, climbed the Troll Wall. And it's a really quite dangerous wall because of, like, there's still rock fall. It's not the most sturdy rock. And they actually ended up going up when it was kind of rainy, and then it got stormy, and then they didn't have a jacket. And they... Andreas, in another podcast, actually, Klatrepodden, he tells the story of how he worried for his life on the wall at some point because they were actually, like, really cold.
You don't know fjellvettreglene?
Var det?
Oh, it's the rules of thumb for going out on trips in the mountain.
I guess that they didn't. They're from Sweden, so I'm probably not. I'm joking.
Tell them fjellvettreglene.
Yeah, the quick lunch had.
But why did you say that? Right? We're from Sweden. In Norway, we used to have a lot of, like, jokes about how stupid the Swedes are. And then the Swedes have the same jokes about how stupid the Norwegians are.
Yeah, no, these guys are very smart. They just are, they're maybe too strong for their own good. I think that's what sometimes happens for these guys. But no, they're very capable. It was just a, and I mean, now they have a great story to tell. And I get to write a song about it, or... You know, inspired in part by
it's that. So great. And anything can become a good song, right?
Yeah.
Even if it was dangerous.
Yeah. Actually, you know what else inspires me a lot? So one of my, I really love food. And I was mentioning to you earlier, I started a food blog in January called Ot M Ge. Mm-hmm. And it's actually inspired by my friend and I were listening to some Norwegian rap, and we heard that you say OMG by saying OMG.
And, okay. maybe some very young people.
And I heard the the Canadian A there, so I convinced my boyfriend to. I mean, he doesn't really contribute that much anymore, but I tried to make
it. Canadian A. What's that?
Well, when we are talking and we want to know something, we might say, like, "How you doing, A?"
Oh, okay.
And, so I fused the Norwegian OMG and my Canadian A, and I've made this OMG blog.
Okay.
Because I'm so inspired by oats, and I just love making recipes and putting weird things together with oats. But this next song that I wanted to play...
No. Hold on a second. Okay. Not next song yet.
Okay.
Where was the trumpet?
Oh.
Did you all hear the trumpet? Did you hear the trumpet, guys? Guess what? There was no trumpet. It was Dana.
I'm sure they could tell in this case. It does so tend good. To sound good over some with some reverb, but I must admit it might have sounded not so good. But you might have
sounded
heard it earlier.
Sounded good. Do you want to tell us how you do it?
Yeah, I would love to. And okay, it's very easy, you guys. It just kind of takes like maybe a month of practice in the shower. That's the best place to practice because you have the beautiful acoustics and you got a little bit of like moisture that helps your voice out. And what I'm doing is I'm actually just singing. So, okay, let me try to take this off so it's a little easier to hear. So I'm singing in my head voice head voice. And then I'm using my lips as the attack sound. So I'm like, actually, what's funny, it's not like a trumpet embouchure. I'm actually using more of a saxophone embouchure where I'm tonguing against the teeth. So I'm saying ta, ta, ta.
Yeah, and then you're keeping your lips very, very close.
Yeah, they're tight, and I'm putting the air just at the side or the corner of my mouth. You want to try?
You know, it looks a little bit like, what does it look like? It looks like you're blowing a little bit out through the lips as well.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and so I'm using my the breath to kind of create a percussive sound with the lips. So. Mm-hmm. And then also, to make it sound kind of like more jazzy, I do a little bit of a, you can add some vibrato, as well as a little bit of a fade out towards the end. So, or like, let's see. Terrible, but yeah, you get the idea. I think
it's great. You all hear this? Dana Swarbrick doing trumpet impression. What's it called?
Yeah, mouth trumpet.
Mouth trumpet. That's great. But you have such a great voice. I mean, and you have a very cool vibrato. Yeah. Yeah, and sorry to interrupt you. I just had to dial back to the trumpet thing because I forgot to say it just after the first song.
I'm just trying to make sure we get it all in.
Yeah, there. We'd love to hear a second song.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is now an appropriate time?
Yes.
I'll do the trumpet again, and hopefully it sounds a little bit better now that I'll hear myself a little better now.
Okay, great.
Okay, so this next one, it's inspired a bit by breakfast. In particular, it's called Cinnamon. But, you know, it's about a little bit more, too. So, enjoy.
Did you really think I would notice where your eyes pierce through mine? Did you really think I wouldn't clue in where you treat me so divine? I know it shouldn't be happening. Life and love ain't fair. Cinnamon, don't get any closer unless you can take the punishment. Spice me with your sin, G me with your season. Love me with your licks and pour honey on your reasons. Roll me with your tongue, love me with your fingers. Hold me with your song, touch me and let it linger. You're my cinnamon. Yes, in so many ways. Make me feel real good inside. You make me wanna scream your name. Oh, you're my cinnamon. Yes, in so many ways. Oh, you so bad it hurts. Don't forget your place. Around me, pull me close and let me go. I want you to tease me, want you to please me, tie me up and lease my soul. I won't lose myself in temptations and shivers down my spine. Cinnamon, you are all temptations in me so sublime. Spice me with your sin, G me with your season. Love me with your licks and pour honey on your reasons. Roll me with your tongue, love me with your fingers. Hold me with your song, touch me and let it linger. You're my cinnamon. Yes, in so many ways. Make me feel real good inside. You make me wanna scream your name. You're my cinnamon. Yes, in so many ways. Oh, I want you so bad it hurts. Don't forget your place.
Such a great singer.
Oh thank you, dude, it's so cool. And I just told you today
like maybe you can even sing live, and you were like, ah, I see what I can do, and then you come and bring this like mouse trumpet thing, this sexy incredible vibrato, and what's it called, growling or something. What you do, it's like so good.
Thank you so much. Well, no, it's always a pleasure to play. Also, given that we haven't been able to play live, what a treat to be able to play live on the radio, yeah, and also to feel a bit of the connection with everyone out there listening and listening in this moment.
Do you feel like connected to the people who are listening? Like, did you think of everybody while you were playing?
And so I try to, because honestly, like, my favorite part of being a musician is performing, and I miss it so, so much. But it really is so much harder to feel that when I'm not there in real life with people. And I really miss, like, sometimes when I do my trumpet and there's reverb and a stage and there's other people on the stage as well, I'll see people in the audience looking around, where is the trumpet? And when when their eyes land on me, I see their jaws drop when they realize that sound is coming from my mouth.
Yeah.
And so, like, I miss those moments. But, it is funny to
think. Just have to imagine them. Imagine them now as the listeners come to understand what they've been hearing. So, that was Dana Swarbrick here with me today in Spesa Musik. So great.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Of course. what do you want to do now? We have 3 minutes to go.
Okay, cool. Well, I guess I could mention the final paper that is currently in the pipeline, which is called the Corona Music Database. And basically, along with colleagues across the world, actually, the leader is at the University of Aarhus, and that's Niels Hansen. And he organized several of us here at RITMO, so Jona Voskoski, my supervisor, as well as Melvin Trudor, who's one of her master's students, who's now doing psychology up in Trondheim. So we participated, along with a gentleman in Australia who's based at Oxford, as well as a woman in Jyväskylä. We all cataloged or characterized a bunch of different corona musicking that happened. So we watched some videos and tried to catalog the emotions and different characteristics of these videos. And I spent a lot of time making this interactive data visualization called a Shiny app. So basically, anyone is able to go to this website and navigate through this data to understand how different trends of videos actually changed across time, and understand things like when was joint musicking pretty frequent, or what was the popularity of live stream concerts or live stream references in media items as well, based on the sample that we collected. So that was a super fun project.
Wow. That sounds like a great contribution to collective memory.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much for being with me here today in Solveig Spesa Musik, Dana. Thank you so much for singing for us live and sharing so much information about your very incredible research works, and I encourage people to follow you, both your OATS blog and your research. So look up Dana Swarbrick and Dana and the Monsters.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a fun time.
And thank you to Ingmar too.
Yes, thank you, Ingmar.
Body only, passion will suffice. I change. You play.